friends, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Reeves.
And we are the Oh God Podcast. We're a community where people can come together and question faith, ask hard questions, and deconstruct and reconstruct faith together. And I'm Maddie, and I want to welcome you to a faith community. A faith community that redefines faith in a world that isn't as black and white as the church may make it seem. Hi, Reeves. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just kidding. Reeves, that was the best intro I've ever heard in my life.
Why, thank you, man.
You play me so well.
Yeah, you're welcome. Years of studying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of studying, would you like to elaborate on your idea about the podcast becoming a miming podcast?
So right before that ridiculous intro, I pitched that we should start a miming podcast, mostly because so Maddie projects really well and like just naturally speaks louder, whereas I do not, and I don't speak loudly or project my voice literally at all. So it's always a conversation where Danny's like, hey, Reeves, if you could just get a little closer to the mic or speak up at all, that would be great.
You could just, I don't know, talk, Reeves, and helpful.
Yeah. Anyway, so we were joking about how much Maddie was projecting and how she just needs to shut up so that, so then we were like, well, we'll just start we'll just start a miming podcast.
You know, I support the
mime
idea.
Mime it into the mic, and then those brain lengths will transverse into the microphone.
Okay.
Through the audio apps.
Right.
And they will intuitively know what we are miming.
You know what?
It's science.
It
really
sounds very scientific.
Thank you.
You are using big words.
Yes.
Are they all words? I'm not sure.
The world may
but
never
you
know.
Are giving it the old college try.
The old college try. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We have too much fun with this. Mm-hmm. Part of that also I was thinking about is how long it took for us to name our Patreon tiers.
Okay, I don't know if anyone's like actually looked at the names
They're
for the
really
new tiers.
Funny. Okay.
We had a blast naming those bad boys. Can we just like do you have the list pulled up?
I'm pulling them up right now on our Instagram because I think that they're hilarious.
Oh, I think they're so funny. But I also, Austin always says that I make myself laugh harder than I make anyone else laugh. And it's true.
Listen,
I make myself laugh.
You have to make yourself
anyone
laugh.
Anyone else will ever laugh at me.
That's what it's about. That's just self-love. I am the funniest person
yes,
that I know.
Yes, I am the funniest person that I know.
Wow. That's all that matters.
We're the same person.
It's weird. So we start very basic.
Yeah.
With the pod squad.
It's cute. It's short. Pod squad.
Right. And so then logically, the next round would be
pod squad plus. Pod squad? Pod squad plus. Gross.
It reminded me of a Scott's Tots.
Pod squad. Scott's Tots.
My whole body had the reaction of the Scott's
Tots. What a good episode. Scott's Tots. Pod squad. Plus.
Right.
Pod squad plus.
That one makes sense. Then it's super mega pod squad.
Which is incredible.
It is. And
genius,
when we thought of it,
someone
I
say.
Was like, that's it.
Yes.
Almost as much as the next
this
one.
This one's my personal favorite. Uh-huh. Mega squad super pod. It just sounds
so cool.
Good. So good.
The imagery that I get for this is like Sharknado.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Maybe it's because by like Sharknado 18, it was like mega super Sharknado 10,000.
Yes. It like makes me think of my family's obsessed with musicals, and we used to always watch Jesus Christ Superstar, and like the main song is like Jesus Christ Superstar, and that's what makes me think of mega squad super pod.
Oh, we should come up with songs. I like it. No one wants to hear us sing though. It's okay.
Yes.
So then we go platinum. Mega squad super pod platinum. Which is incredible.
And then we get to oh my gosh, I cannot speak. Extreme pod squad max plus 2.0.
I mean,
it's genius.
That name is just iconic.
Yeah, it's really good.
I really wish we would have gotten video of us naming these, though. We sat outside of a Starbucks and laughed for like an hour and a half.
Oh my gosh, yes. And then we had the idea of, we thought it would be super funny. And obviously, Maddie and I, we're idea people. Are they all going to happen? Never in a million years. But we're dreamers. So we had the idea of like it would be super funny in like announcing the tiers to have like a karate styled video where
with like punching explosions
and kicking in the air, and it's just like Mega Squad Super Pod.
Ka-chow. Just like stuff yeah. everywhere.
Because a little known fact, but I am a purple belt in karate, so I think we could have, pulled it off.
Reeves, you would beat me in a fight.
I'm scrappy. I'm a purple belt, but I'm scrappy. Yeah, I had to fight my way out of. I like to joke. I have three brothers, and so I always like to joke that I had to fight my way out of the house. Because I kind of did.
You know, yeah. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. Big families, you gotta
fight
your way to the top of the chain.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, Maddie, tell me about your weekend.
Oh my gosh, I had the best weekend, and this is a little bit delayed. Just because because
we record pretty far in advance,
but
the moment.
It was the best weekend. So two of my best friends got married this weekend, and I got to officiate the ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Look at you.
I know. I felt very official. I also was like freaking out the entire time, just out of fear that like anything would go wrong. Mm-hmm. Like the actual ceremony part, I'm like, this is, I can speak to a crowd, that's no problem. But what if I get up there and I say everyone's name wrong? Or like, what if I lose the binder that has 8 copies of the ceremony in it, but only in this binder? So then I had them like hidden in spots just in case something happened. I took my job way, way too seriously. We got to the end of the night and I like had the marriage license and in the thing we were leaving. It's like midnight when everything's over. And someone was like, hey, can I see it? And my instant reaction was no. And I like threw my body in front of the binder as though I was like defending
my
a
life
human.
Depends on this.
I have one job and it's to get this turned in on Monday. You cannot touch it. You cannot look at it. You cannot perceive it. So I'm a great officiant if anyone needs something.
Just throwing punches.
I
right
take
and
it
left.
So seriously. Yes. But it was so beautiful good. And it was so fun. And they're just like the best people. Mm-hmm. So it was really fun to get to see them and celebrate them. So
I love that so much.
I love love. And it was funny to me though. I have some other friends that I'm officiating their ceremony later next year as well. And I actually introduced them. So like their entire relationship is because of me. So they're welcome.
Yeah. She said with humility.
Of course.
Yeah.
But I laugh because like I'm obviously not married and I'm like not seeing anyone. So I'm like, I love being the single friend whose everyone else's love is dependent on me. The unmarried person in the group. It's beautiful. I'm like Googling, like, what do you say to people who are in love and getting married in a wedding ceremony? Because I don't know what to say. Yes. Yeah. Oh,
that's funny. I don't know if I'd know what to say, though, honestly.
Mm-mm. You have no wisdom to leave with us? Oh.
I was telling someone earlier, Austin and I have a very casual marriage. Like, we just, I don't know, we just coexist. There's not a lot of structure there, so
but,
I don't know
but
if
it,
I have any,
it's
like,
so
marital wisdom.
Healthy, though. Like, I think that's the piece. Like, I look at some other relationships, and it's just very comfortable. Like, you both just, you work together really, really well. And I appreciate
it. I had
a
friend who pointed out that he is like the combination of all three of my brothers. And though that does keep me up at night, it is very accurate. My mom also likes to point out that he's very similar to my brothers. And I'm like, gosh darn it.
I guess I like you guys at least a little bit.
I didn't like that. But anyway, he like shares a lot of, he fits in very well with the family dynamic. And we're just very comfortable around each other, which, you know, is good.
Yeah. Well, that's good, especially because your whole house is falling apart right
now. Our life is in chaos at the moment. several things have happened. I hit a deer recently. Not like, this was a few weeks ago, but...
with her bare hands.
I just went up and gave it a piece of my mind. so sorry. I hit that deer pretty hard. Actually, I wasn't going that fast, but... my car was not okay, and I'm assuming the deer also was not okay, but we could not find it, so maybe it went and it healed, but anyway, so we've been down one car, so we've been carpooling, and I feel like the mom that like constantly is forgetting her child at school, because literally every day Austin will be like, it's fine, I'll find someone to pick me up, because I like always forget come like 5 o'clock, and I'll like be doing something or have like made plans because I forget we're sharing a car right now. It's truly embarrassing. But anyways, so yeah, carpooling is fun. We did just learn today that the car is not totaled, so that is good. Yes.
That is good.
Yeah, so that was kind of a relief because we were really worried we'd have to find a new car right now. But we also, what else? Our water heater broke. We think this morning it was working yesterday. I was able to like take a shower, but it took a really long time for it to like heat up. And then Austin said it wasn't working for him. So this morning we literally like tried for 15 minutes to get it to work. And then I went out to the garage and it was like leaking all over the garage.
Oh,
so
no.
That's a bummer. It's the second time this water heater has like messed up. So luckily we're renting, so we don't have to fix it. We just can't shower at the moment. Or we can shower, but it's cold. But it's also, I don't want a cold shower. So
it is good for you though.
Yeah,
I know.
There was that TikTok for a while, the whole one where that bit is like the I will not be doing that. You know, that
I will
one.
Not be doing that.
I think in the original one it's like the four things that'll change your life, and one is like taking cold showers, and he's like, I will not be doing that. Yeah.
No, never. It needs to be like boiling or nothing.
Yes, same. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want my skin to like peel off afterwards because it was so hot.
That's
you're welcome for that mental image. I'm so sorry.
You're very visual today.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know. I just had a Taco Bell Baja Blast, so maybe that's what's
it's
the colada version. Yeah,
you.
It's really it's all in one. That Mountain Dew. It's hard.
Amazing. Well, segues are hard, as
yes.
Bo Burnham would say. But today we are talking about mental health and
yes.
its relationship to the church,
mm-hmm. which is a much needed topic. This is one that I love to talk about and could rant about forever because we have such a weird, tenuous relationship in Christianity with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's super problematic because as a person who, like, I have a lot of anxiety, I've always been an anxious person. You can ask my family, like, I just was a bundle of nerves as a child. And, we just, like, don't talk about mental health enough. And then we shame people into thinking that there's something wrong with them because mm-hmm. they have mental health, or they're not a good enough Christian, or, you know, just trusting God, all those things. Like,
yeah.
It just, to me, those things are a lot more damaging than it is actually helpful.
Yeah. Well, and it's crazy, like, how pervasive that, like, stigma is within just, like, Christian culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know for me, like, most of my mental health journey, which I think we'll share in a little bit, like, it really began to evolve in a church context. Like, when I started seminary, that was when I was basically like, they looked me dead in the eyes and like, we really think you probably should go to therapy. And I was like, well,
oof. Yeah,
thanks for
yeah.
that. But it was the best thing ever. And yet the biggest reason why I didn't start going to begin with, outside of trying mm-hmm. to figure out like how to make it happen logistically, is that there is a stigma that exists that's
yes.
like almost unspoken sometimes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that this conversation is huge. It's like very near and dear to my family and to the way that we all kind of exist and
mm-hmm.
Relate to one another. So I'm ready to just begin pulling it apart and seeing where we land.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Same.
So I feel like as we start this conversation, it's helpful to talk a little bit about what mental health realistically looks like in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
right now. I looked at the National Alliance on Mental Health's website. They have a ton of infographics and statistics on just the state of the U.S.'s mental mm-hmm. health. And this was updated in March of 2021. So a lot of this is also, you think about coming out of 2020, how much more heightened some of these numbers might even be from what they put. But this is like as updated as it I was able to find. So on their site, it says that 1 in 5 U.S. adults suffer from some form of mental health or mental illness. 1 in 20 U.S. adults experience a severe mental illness within the year. So you think about like just generally 1 in 5, like that's
mm-hmm.
so common.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's like not even an entire friend group, you know?
Yes.
And then 1 in 6 U.S. youth 6 to 17 experience mental health disorder each year. So, I mean, it's just like my words aren't there. Those are lots of big numbers. Sorry,
yes.
Rube.
No, but I mean, it just goes to show that like I think pretty much everyone I talk to, like mental health is always a conversation
right.
because it seems like everyone has something and
right.
like that's, you know, an overgeneralization. But to me, it seems like everyone I talk to, someone has something, whether it's anxiety or depression or
mm-hmm.
PTSD. Like I feel like it is really difficult to exist in the world today without one having that knowledge of like so many people have it, which
mm-hmm.
in a way, like is a lot less isolating because it's realizing like you're not the only person. And but in another way, it's also like, wow, that's a lot of people. It's, you know, so like, what do we do with that?
Yeah. Well, and the statistic that got me was 50% of all lifetime mental illness. So the stuff that you carry with you begins by 14.
Wow.
And 75% by 24. So,
oh my gosh.
You think about like the college experience, even like just those 4 years. For me, it hits. Like, no wonder. Like there's so many, even within that, but starting as young as 14 and just how, you know, one in five people are suffering from something and most of them have it by the time they're out of junior high. It's like, well, this is not even just a conversation we need to be having in the church, but just across the board, like figuring out how to really have this conversation as young as possible because it's hitting so young.
Absolutely. And one thing is I was looking, I found this one study that was done by Lifeway, and they have like a research department, but they did a specific study on like how do pastors typically respond or react to mental health issues and what is the knowledge there on, and it had all those same figures in terms of like one in five adults, one in 20 children. So it was like a pretty recent study. But one thing I was shocked to find is that, I don't know why, but in my head I was like, it's probably going to be a pretty negative response. Because it was done with, let's see, it was comprised of 1,000 senior Protestant pastors. And some of the findings were that, you know, 3 out of 4 pastors said that they had at least one family member, friend, or congregation member who had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder specifically. 74% said they knew someone diagnosed with clinical depression. 57% said they knew at least 3 people who fell into clinical depression category. So it was a high percentage of people who were like, no, I know people who have been like gotten received a diagnosis. But the disconnect was in sort of like, what do you do with that? So even though there was like a lot of familiarity with mental illness, it was sort of, there's a big gap on how proactively churches were approaching the issue. So even though there's like a desire to help people, there was not an amount of concrete supportive action. And the survey showed that there was a lack of training for leaders on how to recognize mental illness. Very few churches have plans to assist families affected with mental illness, and few churches are staffed with like a counselor or someone who's skilled like in the mental illness area. And I thought that that was really telling because I think my initial thoughts when we start talking about the church and mental illness is that the church has a really negative view and relationship to mental health, mental illness specifically. And though like I still think there is like a lot of disconnect there, to me, it was telling because I think more of the issue is people don't know how to respond.
Right.
I was having a conversation. I asked some of my friends what their thoughts were around like mental health within the church. And I think like a typical Christian response when you don't know what to say to something is I'm going to pray about that.
That spiritual bypassing.
Yeah. And people don't know. My friend was sharing like people just don't know what to do with someone who like hasn't showered in a week and doesn't have the energy to get out of bed. Like people don't know what to say in those situations. And I think that's more of the issue is our uncomfortability of like, we want to help, we have this desire, but like, where do we go with that? And so then we slap on these responses of like, just pray about it. And then we get these really unhealthy ideas that like prayer solves mental illness or that, you know, this is a result of something you did. It's a character flaw, or God is punishing you for some reason. Like we get these really unhealthy ideas because we simply just don't know what to do with mental health. So then like our theologies really suffer because of it.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, to me, that also feels like a byproduct of like shallow teaching in some ways as well. You know, it's like there are some instances where that whole like, if you pray about it or everything happens for a reason, it feels like it falls in alignment with those one-liners, right?
Yeah.
Where in some situations, that works. But what happens when it's a space where that doesn't really fit anymore?
Yeah.
We don't have the language to put alongside trying to figure out how to help people. And I think that to me, it's interesting to hear like all of those pastors recognizing that this is a very real thing. Because then to me, that would mean that there would be that next step of, okay, well, then we probably need to combat our theology in this space to figure out how to address this, because clearly the issue is here.
Yes.
So what do we do with it, and how much depth do we have within our teaching so that not just those people feel supported, but our people also know how to support yes. their friends and their family who are suffering?
Absolutely. I think that's where a large part, and I won't say the whole disconnect, because I still think that there are, you know, I've heard horror stories about mm-hmm. how some pastors and churches as a whole have responded to certain things.
Yeah.
But I think largely that disconnect is, how do we actively help people? How do mm-hmm. we respond? Like teaching, you know, your Sunday school leaders, your ministry leaders, how to respond to someone so that there aren't those like really dangerous theologies that come mm-hmm. out of it.
Yeah. So there was a quote that I heard on a podcast called the Faith Mental Wellness Podcast, mm-hmm. which is really awesome. And it said that we have growing research that is continuing to show that when you ethically integrate clients' faith in treatment, it improves outcomes and they get better faster. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was really interesting, especially when we talk about the fact that clergy can recognize that mm-hmm. there is very much a need within their communities to begin integrating mental health support and awareness and conversation into their teaching. And yet it's not really happening. And yeah. yet there's research to show that when you do that, it actually impacts and improves the yeah. health of your congregation. And I just think that that's really interesting, especially because there are some churches in context who will, you know, use that spiritual bypassing language to try to brush away mm-hmm. the mental health needs of their congregation. And I mean, if talking about it and integrating it helps, then mm-hmm. that, I mean, obviously is going to be making it worse mm-hmm. when you just kind of brush it away. So.
Yes, absolutely. And I know, like, in my own life, I've seen a big difference when I'm a part of faith spaces where they're actively addressing mental health mm-hmm. as opposed to just like not even talking about it, or even just, like you said, like brushing it off and like bypassing it. Mm-hmm. I found this like really good list of like common misconceptions, or like Christian, like typical Christian responses to mental health mm-hmm. that I think are really, like, as I was reading through them, I just like felt the anger rising inside me. But like, I can think of instances in my own life where I've like heard these things. Mm-hmm. So one like misconception, is that mental health is a sign of weakness, mm-hmm. that it is a character flaw or a lack of willpower on your part.
Ugh.
Which just like kills me a little inside.
Yeah.
This one, which we already kind of touched on, is that you can pray away mental illness, which is just so troubling to me. And like, sadly, like, I mean, I can distinctly remember times in my life where I believed this, mm-hmm. where it was so ingrained in me that like I believed I could just pray enough and mm-hmm. my anxiety would go away, or my depression would go away, or I wouldn't be like having panic attacks so much. Like right. if I could just pray enough, then it would like take that away, and that it was some sort of like fault within me that was like still happening. And I found this like really beautiful quote by Fonda Bryant, where she shares her struggle as a Black woman dealing with depression. And she says, present day African Americans feel as though we don't need help mentally. All we do today is the same that our ancestors did, which is pray about it, give it to God. But you wouldn't tell someone with cancer, diabetes, or a heart problem to just pray about it and give it to God, would you? You'd hopefully say, you need to see a doctor. But when it comes to mental health in the African American community, there's very little compassion or empathy. Mm. And one thing that I found time and time again, and like sort of throughout like researching this, is that often marginalized communities are the ones with the highest rates of like mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And then there's this sort of this cycle of like stigma and then like leading to more like stigma and more mm-hmm. like, it's just,
well, and even going back to, I mean, that makes sense, right? Cause even going mm-hmm. back to some of the statistics we were talking about earlier, like there is also a direct correlation, like mm-hmm. you said, to increased numbers of mental illness
yeah.
within marginalized communities because of the systems that exist to mm-hmm. oppress those communities.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's that, yeah, it's all very cyclical.
Mm-hmm. Another misconception is that God is testing your faith. And this one just really grinds my gears. This idea mm-hmm. of God doesn't give you more than you can handle.
It's that the shallow amount line. Of,
yes. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, I feel like this is a line I have heard given in a lot of different circumstances, whether it's like mental health, a death, mm-hmm. Some sort of big loss or transition. And though I know, like, the intention there is good, and I believe that it is wholeheartedly this lack of knowing what to say, so we mm-hmm. just spit out these lines. Mm-hmm. But saying that God gives that never gives you more than you can handle about a mental illness or, death,
mm-hmm.
to me is just really, really tone deaf, yeah. I think.
Yeah. And it speaks a little bit to, I mean, to the like way in which someone might perceive God,
mm-hmm.
which I think then becomes this deeper reflection of what they're going mm-hmm. through. And I think in a lot of these like bypassing comments, one of the things that I've started to notice in my own experience is that a lot of the time when someone is saying that, it is because they're uncomfortable, but they're uncomfortable and they don't know what to say mm-hmm. because either it's not something they've experienced, so they lack yes. the context, or it is something that they've experienced, but they've never been given their own language for this experience.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to figure mm-hmm. out for themselves through a conversation with you in some ways.
Yes.
And this line is one of many lines that I feel like does more good for the person saying it than the person receiving it.
Absolutely.
And it speaks to what you believe to be true about God. Like, you believe that God is a God who would give that yes. to someone or do that to someone.
Yes.
And I think that then begins to show up in a lot of other areas as well. So it's mm-hmm. that like
that God is this like vindictive mm-hmm. like just dealing out anxiety and depression like, and mental ugh. Illnesses right and left. And it to me it paints this picture of just a very heartless
mm-hmm.
God who does not care. And it reinforces this idea that mental illness is a punishment,
right?
That it is you paying for whatever sin, or this idea of like, well, God is like testing your faith mm-hmm. to see if you're truly pious. Like, that's not a God that I would want to follow.
No. And,
no.
And it's also this idea of like testing. I struggle with the idea of God testing us.
Yes.
Anyway, because I feel like so much of my like spiritual practice as it is right now is so heavily relational mm-hmm. and I think about the other relationships that I value and they're not contingent on tests
mm-hmm.
it's on trust, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, to have this healthy relationship with God is to trust God,
yes,
but not to feel like I'm being quizzed all the time.
Yeah.
And that's just in general. So then you mm-hmm. factor in that someone wants to say that a mental illness is a test.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a whole other layer
yeah.
of just problem.
Yes. Yeah. If that's going to be the test that God gives you.
Yeah.
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 Mm. Yeah. So another misconception is that you are a disappointment to God or you are a bad Christian because you are struggling with mental illness. So there's obviously a lot of overlap with these, but the bottom line is kind of this, this idea that we are not good enough if you're struggling with mental health, that God is punishing you or inflicting this upon you in some way,
mm-hmm.
Which is just so harmful.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, personally, when I did become a Christian and started that relationship with God, I did see a huge improvement in my mental health, but that doesn't mean that it like totally goes away or is this like magic wand mm-hmm. or something like that. And there have been a lot of studies that show that like faith can have a very mm-hmm. like positive correlation on your faith. Wait, faith can have a on your mental health.
There it is. Yeah,
faith
yep.
can positively impact your mental health. But on the like conversive side of that, the flip mm-hmm. side of that, it can very much negatively impact your mental health if you're a part of a space that very much like values strict rules, low like human autonomy and things like that. And so I feel like that's where there's this tension is like there's this sweet spot
mm-hmm.
where faith can really beautifully impact your mental health. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side of that, it can be so harmful.
Yeah.
And I know you and I have both heard countless stories of how people's mental health have been horribly, horribly mm-hmm. affected
mm-hmm.
through actions and words of the church.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I found this really good article kind of on like the pros and cons of faith and your mental health. So one of the biggest cons is that there is a negative psychological effect of religious involvement, includes excessive devotion to religious practice that can result in some sort of like family breakup or like dynamics such as like marriage. There can be a lot of like differences in the level of religiosity between like spouses can really, I mean, that leads to like a high level of divorce, which I feel like this is a whole other topic, but, and I know you and I have talked about this off pod, but about how this idea of like, you know, being equally yoked or having the same spirituality as the person you're looking for, like you need to seek someone who's like, which like, I'm not saying you don't need to seek someone who's like,
core values are similar.
Yeah,
to yours,
but yeah. I think this idea of like, you have to find someone who's like the most spiritual human in the world. And like, if that's really important to you, but I also feel like there's this that can then really negatively affect your dating life because you're constantly judging someone else on their entire faith and spirituality, which is like, we're not supposed to judge other people. Anyways, that is a whole other tangent.
Yeah.
But the idea that like that can break up marriages.
Well, and I think when I hear that too, I think of like, there are so many examples of same faith marriages and interfaith marriages both have really healthy examples and really unhealthy examples.
Yes.
And I think when I think about this space and what I've seen in the lives of some of my other friends, the things that have mattered the most came down to mutual respect of the other person, like validating the other person, that like emotional support space, and holding a shared set of common values.
Yeah.
Right. And like, Christianity doesn't own values. Like, values exist across the board. So especially thinking about this, I can imagine that being in a space where, you know, even claiming the same faith but having those values suddenly feel like they're shifting because that faith is evolving differently within the two people. Like, I can imagine that that's really tense. And I don't believe that that's like mutually exclusive to any
one
form of marriage.
Yes. Yeah. Because that actually reminds me of, through like kind of doing some research, I tried to look up some of the history of like Sigmund Freud and like the church, because I know in some of my history classes I've heard before that there was like some backlash, because obviously like he's pretty anti-religion, but it's also complicated. Like, he grew up Jewish and identifies as atheist, but also like is very fascinated in religion, and so a lot of his works are on religion. But one of his biggest critiques of religion was that there was this complete utter like lack of respect for anyone that is not of your faith practice, like and that's across the board of like any religion, is that there's this big lack of respect for anyone else who believes something different, which I think there is a big lesson there. Anyways, and that's on Sigmund Freud, but so sorry, back to the cons. So like, it can split up marriages. There's like a, if there's difference in level of sort of like faith or devotion, it can lead to that sort of disharmony. And religion can promote really rigid thinking, over dependence on laws and rules, an emphasis on guilt and sin, and a disregard for personal individuality and autonomy. And I feel like that last sentence was like, well, this is why we're here.
You're
this
like,
is literally
oh, well,
why we're doing this whole like show is because of, we've seen those spaces where there is that rigid thinking, the over dependence on laws and rules, an emphasis on guilt and sin, and a disregard for personal and individual autonomy.
Wow. And you hear that list, and on one hand you're like, wow, that place sucks. You know, like, you're like, that sounds terrible. And to me, I'm like hearing that list and I'm thinking through, like, does that even sound like Jesus at all?
No. No.
I mean, I'm thinking, I'm like, where did Jesus say that that was what that was supposed to be?
So true. I found this like really beautiful other article where the author was talking about sort of that disparity, but how like, you know, the Sermon on the Mount talks a lot about like, you know, blessed be the meek and like all these things, and how there's throughout Jesus's like ministry, we can see this emphasis on like mental health. I mean, there wasn't the same language like that would have been used, but like this emphasis on like, you know, having peace. And yeah, I just think that it's like with so many other things, I think in this area, we've really like missed the mark or maybe not interpreted it the, it the way that we could have or should.
I mean, I think the interpretation piece comes down to a lot of it too, right? Like, I think about, what is it, the story of Samuel? Is it Samuel who ends up in the wilderness?
First Kings? I think it's Elijah.
Elijah. And all of that, I think of even the story of Elijah and, you know, him running off and ending up in the wilderness.
Oh, I love that story.
And, you know, sleeping and, and isolating himself and all of these things. And God just kind of showing up and being like, hey, bud, let's eat a snack. Go back to sleep. You know, and just being that like supportive presence.
Yes.
And then being like, okay, so now we're gonna get up and we're gonna take a look at this. And he even like, what I also really love about that story is God asks Elijah, what are you doing here twice?
Yeah.
And the first time Elijah answers the way that I feel like I answer, which is, well, listen, here's the laundry list of everything. And and it's like just very intense.
And it's like, here's all the things.
And then God's like, okay, so why? Let's do this again. Yeah. So why are we here? And it's just this very like
gentle.
It reminds me a lot of the relationship I have with my therapist where it's like, okay, so what are we feeling? Okay, that's a good feeling. What else are we feeling? And just that like very stable presence. But it's not always interpreted that way. And I think about just biblical scholarship as a whole and the fact that one very specific community has been the community to interpret all biblical scholarship. So you're not getting people coming to the text all the time, intentionally reading it in a way that will allow us to find the language to support our congregation when it comes to their mental health. I feel like it really until recently. And so it still feels very like new, like it's this new area where you're reading something and you're like, oh wait, that totally applies to this.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I love that story. That is easily one of my favorite definitely favorite Old Testament story of just like Elijah in the wilderness, and so good. And like I think I remember my dad like a while back did a whole sermon like on like mental health and just talking about like different people throughout the Bible who were very clearly depressed. Like look at Jonah, that prayer. You tell me he's not depressed. Like he was really going through it. He was in a fish metaphorically or realistically, we don't know, but like he was going through it. And then you've got Paul, who was literally like imprisoned multiple times, like always kind of like on the run.
David.
Yeah. That like, and that's the thing that kills me is we, like mental health, when we think of sort of like mental health as a profession or like as a study or a science, and we think of like religion, I read one thing where it was talking about how like in a lot of ways they're answering the same questions.
Yeah.
Like we are talking about the deepest things that make us human, those experiences of like what makes us feel seen and valued, how do we describe what we experience, what is the meaning of life, how are we processing, how are we overcoming adversity, and that's where I'm like, man, we are really missing an opportunity if we're looking at this book that we like claim to found everything on, and then we're looking at these people and we're not realizing like they were very human and they were very much struggling, and God didn't tell them that they weren't enough or that they weren't, you know, Christian enough or that they weren't like faithful enough.
Yeah.
And yet we just kind of slap people and, you know,
we undersell the humanity within the human experience all the time.
Yeah.
Right. Like I love the way that you say that, because it's true. Like these are people and these are stories about people living lives as people on earth. Right.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we talked about when we talked to Pastor Charity, but even that I come up with a lot, especially around Christmas, is this idea that as Christians, you know, we serve a God who took on human form at its most vulnerable from infancy all the way up and lived the full gamut of experiences, right? Like went through an awkward teenage phase, you know, had serious losses, was completely isolated and thrown out of communities, but simultaneously was welcomed into community with people, and this like very real human experience that happened in a very real human body, and didn't have to.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, when we talk about mental health and any kind of health, there is this reality that it's happening within our physical bodies.
Yes.
And so often I think we try to create as much distance as we can from the humanness of ourselves and our lives and our bodies and from what it means to have a relationship with the divine, because we have a hard time seeing how those two things go together. And yet Christ shows us how those two things go together.
Yes.
And there's this like embodiment of faith that happens. And you know, the things that we feel and the emotions that we feel and the ways that we show up, they like linger within our physical bodies. And we talked about that with Charity's episode, which means that the things that are happening to us mentally impact us physically.
Yes.
And if God chose to come to earth in a physical body, God cares about our bodies, which means that God cares about our mental health. And I think that all of those things together for me was like one of the things was the most impactful was the realization that, you know, we see a very real lived human experience in all of the stories in the Bible. And yet, you know, when we read it, we distance ourselves from the stuff that is the most real, right? Like very rarely are you sitting through a lament service, just like casually. And those are some of the most intense, emotional, like impactful things, you know, especially like reading through the Psalms and all of those things. But we don't spend a lot of time there because that's that's a big feeling, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think that it's so important. And that has been a huge thing for me is remembering that like what happens in this body and in this brain matters and it's valuable and it's part of this experience. And one of the things that, you know, we say a lot in church is that we want to be transformed by Christ. Like we want the Holy Spirit to like come in and just change us from the inside out. And then we do absolutely nothing to make any room to be changed from the inside out. Like that inside out change comes in the fact of like dealing with your stuff, you know, and like the growth and
work
and processing it. And I think like, I mean, I think it's hard for us to say we want to make room for transformation and then not address
never
mental health.
Take any steps. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that is the process of learning and healing and growing and dealing and processing. And, like, all of that is the growth process.
Yes.
And it's a very holy process.
Yes. It is a holy process. Yeah. Yes. Have you heard that song where it's like, from the inside? Yeah. Uh-huh. The, like, youth song? Okay. Oh, we used to sing that all the time.
It's,
give me enough time and I'll think of it. I was once in the youth praise band and then I shouldn't have ever been there, but but yeah, we used to sing that one all the time. Yes to everything. Cause one, we deeply undervalue our bodies as Christians. Like I cannot tell you the amount of times I've heard like, you know, the sin is flesh, like flesh is sinful and like we are innately sinful as humans. And so like we can't be trusted and our emotions can't be trusted and anything that's of the flesh cannot be trusted. And that is so over time, like that is very degrading because start to believe like, oh, well, my body doesn't matter and my health doesn't matter. And, you know, we see like places in scripture where like God is clearly like that story back to the Elijah story. God, like, while Elijah's in the wilderness, wakes him up and gives him food, like, cares for his body, like, makes sure that the needs are met. And I just think that we don't, the hill that I will die on is that we do not value our, like, bodies and our health enough as Christian. Like, we are so, so hard on ourselves because we're told constantly that our bodies are innately sinful and that we are humans are innately sinful. And so then everything suffers, I think, because of that.
Yeah.
Our emotional health, our mental health, our physical health. And I think that there is a lot of beauty in that idea of like, you know, God, we believe in a God that came and took like human form and like that is really beautiful.
And a God that felt emotions in a real body.
Yes.
You know, and I like, I don't know. I just, that to me has been really impactful as of recent is this idea of being present in my body. Which means I have to deal with what's going on inside of my head.
And like, I just, we don't treat mental health as if it's like another need that needs to be met. And it is something that like, I think that is when we address our mental health, we are showing up the best that we can, like in the world. Like when I am actively like, you know, when I've been in spaces where I need therapy, like I come out functioning much better, you know, as a human, and I show up better in my marriage. I show up better in the lives of the people around me. And I am better able to, and what I feel like is sort of my like call or whatever, or just like my passions. Like I am better able to show up in the world in those things that I feel like are those passions that God has given me.
Yeah.
Whereas when I'm not like actively working on myself, like I am just limping around pretending I know everything and beating myself up because I don't think I'm a good enough Christian. I just need to pray it away. And I've been in those spaces, mm-hmm. and I was not showing up my best self. Mm-mm. You know, I was struggling and everyone around me was struggling and no one wanted to talk about it because we all felt so ashamed and embarrassed and guilty mm-hmm. about our mental health issues. And I just think when we sit and we address it, like, I have grown so much in my faith through being actively in therapy,
yep.
and being able to process through, like, deconstruction, like sitting with my therapist and being like, okay, why do I get so anxious when I, like, talk about alcohol or mm-hmm. sex, or, like, why do those things, like, you know, really stress me out? And so, like, let's unpack that, or, like, let's talk about why I have such a, like, guilt complex around everything, or mm-hmm. I feel like I need to please people all the time. And, like, being able to process those things, like, those things impact me. They impact my relationship to how I view and relate to God, and they impact everyone else around me. So when I am working on those things and being the best Reeves that I can be, like, you know, that's all that we can do.
Yeah. Oh man, that's good. That's so good. No, I was thinking as you were talking about just this idea of shame, and I believe when I think about, you know, what it means for something to be considered sinful,
mm-hmm.
for me, it's really rooted in, will this cause myself or someone else yes. to feel shame?
Mm-hmm.
And I think about how long I went without dealing with what was going on inside of my head because I felt shame. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was my sin to carry necessarily so much as the sin of the community around me mm-hmm. inflicting that shame upon me like that.
Yeah.
And the reality that, like, that was something that I carried with me for a long time. And I remember my like first week of seminary, we had to go and we were all kind of sharing our stories. And I, as an Enneagram 8, am a naturally distrustful person,
mm-hmm.
comes with the number, but trust is like a big thing for me. And I remember we were talking about things and multiple people were like, I really feel like you should talk to someone and, like, unpack some of these stories that you're sharing. And my gut was like, absolutely not. Like, I could not do that. And then I'm going through the candidacy process within the United Methodist Church. And part of that is you have to take a psych eval. And in the conversation with the person who did it, they're like, everything's great. And we really think you should probably, like, talk to someone. And I was like, well, I probably should talk to someone if I fail the test.
It's fine. Coming up a few times.
But it ended up being the best thing ever. And what I've realized all of this time mm-hmm. is that, like, A, that shame wasn't mine. That was someone mm-hmm. else's that was put on me. But in learning to trust myself and my own story more because of the healing that's happening, mm-hmm. I have a better relationship with God because I trust God more.
Mm.
Right? Like, a lot of what I was trying to do is figure it out myself, but I was saying that I was, you know, figuring it out with God because I was praying about it sometimes, mm-hmm. but I wasn't doing anything to make any room for God to actually do anything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I very much believe that, like, the shame that exists within the church is not the person's sins to carry, but the leaders in the congregation in that space placing that shame on that person.
Yes.
And as leaders, like, you and I, we've talked about this a lot, like, as church leaders, both of us believe it is so important for us to deal with our own stuff, because how the heck are we supposed to help anybody yes. else carry
if I'm projecting
anything?
All of my shame yep. on someone else, or yep. all of my guilt.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, had a total revelation while you were sitting here, because I've never thought of it that way. But this idea of, because I started therapy my sophomore year of college. Mm-hmm. I, like I shared earlier, I've always been anxious. Ask any member of my family. I was a highly anxious human being. I'm still anxious. I'm not going to say it like I'm over. Like, I have anxiety. Uh-huh. But just, like, could not handle anything. Storms, no way. Like, I literally would just have panic attacks immediately. But in my sophomore year of college, for whatever reason, like, it just, everything was mm-hmm. at a, like, high stress point all the time. I, like, couldn't function without having, like, panic attacks every day. And I finally, like, decided to sign up for, like, counseling, because I had one of my best friends, and she was sort of, like, my mentor at the time, was a really big proponent of, like, you know, getting help, medication, things like that. And so she, like, helped me walk through the process of, like, signing up for therapy. And the biggest thing I would talk about in there is talk about, like, how guilty I felt all the time. And mm-hmm. it all came back to, like, without fail, it was always would come back to the expectations I felt like I had to fill as mm-hmm. like a Christian. Mm-hmm. So it felt like, you know, the expectations I needed to be XYZ and to be the best possible Christian I could be. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I was carrying around all this guilt and anxiety around trying to be someone who I couldn't possibly be as one human and not allowing myself to exist fully and presently because I was always so anxious about everything I was doing wrong. And so when I was able to like really process through those things, I was able to be like, you know what? I'm just here. Yeah. And that's fine. And that's fine today. You know, maybe sometimes I'm just there, but that's what's important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't think I ever really realized that all of that, most of that anxiety came from, came from my ministry involvement, mm-hmm. you know, of like that shame other people were placing, probably not intentionally, maybe some of them intentionally, yeah. but I think for the most part, sort of that unintentional, like, their guilt and their shame that they're then projecting on everyone else.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as I had that kind of like light bulb moment,
yeah.
I remember I was like sitting in a session because most of my therapy work revolves around some like childhood trauma and complex PTSD. So that's like a lot of the stuff that we're working on. And so there are a lot of times where we'll be talking through something and I'll just be like, oh my gosh, that wasn't even me. I was like 5. Of course that wasn't mine, which is, you know, always exciting. But I remember that like light bulb went off and I was like, oh my gosh, somebody put that on me. And then I was like in a rage for a few days because I was like, who did that to childhood me?
Yeah.
And then we ended up in this place now. But I don't know. To me, like that was just such a huge moment of realization that like there are things sometimes that we carry within us that we were never intended to carry.
Yeah.
And so even thinking to this idea of like God gives us challenges or nothing that we can't handle, it's like God didn't give that thing to me, that person did.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And that then changes the relationship and the view that you have of God as well in that moment. So I think that if you couldn't tell from the gist of this, like both of us are very pro therapy when it is possible. And really just pro, I think for me, it's like sharing our stories with one another in a way that at least helps us to feel seen. Like if nothing else, finding ways to affirm the very real human experiences that each of us are having. And to know that wherever you're at in the process of your mental health, that you are certainly not alone in it, that this is like something that most of us are dealing with. And for me, I think it's so important to talk about it more often. Because you never realize, you know, what is going on with somebody else. So
yeah, absolutely. And I, I mean, I think everyone can benefit from therapy, but it's also not always accessible. And that's a whole other conversation,
right?
That we're not going to be able to fix in this podcast. But I think the big thing is really in sort of in some of this research through like the relationship of religion and mental health is there was like one line where it was talking about how like faith practice detached from community doesn't really have any impact on your mental health. So it's that pairing of usually faith practice is like done in a community, like that's just, you know, kind of across the board. And so if you're just like they were talking about faith practices as in like the typical reading the Bible and praying, those were sort of their markers because it's really hard to track faith and what that looks like. But it was saying if you were just like reading your Bible and praying, it probably won't have any effect on your mental health. It's the community piece that's important. And I think that is really telling and huge because, you know, I think sharing our stories and taking that step of vulnerability, which one is really hard because in Christian spaces, we're normally told if you have mental health issues to shut up and stuff it down. But I think talking about our mental health is huge because then you can start to be like, oh, me too. Or like, that's insane. And just sort of ministering through this place of like being present in other people's lives and stories. We're not going to have the right words. Most people, when they share something with you, aren't wanting to be fixed. They're just wanting to be seen and heard.
Yep.
And so you don't have to tell them that God won't give you more than you can handle. You can just sit with them and affirm them. And maybe direct them towards, you know, mental health services in your area. But I think the big piece is being there and validating it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think of that David Kessler quote that grief requires witnessing.
Yes.
And I mean, realistically, within a church context, faith leaders, you know, I mean, I think that that is the biggest thing, especially knowing that there are people within your congregation who can't afford or don't have access to the treatments that they might need. Like being able to just be present with people, I mean, is everything. We don't have to have every answer to every single thing that someone is going through, but we can be present and sit present in a supportive community with people and just witness it as they figure it out. And I think that that is the biggest thing.
Wow. Thank you, friends, for listening. We genuinely appreciate each of you. And, you know, I hope that, you know, if you're not having a great mental health today, take some time to give yourself a pat on the back and do something that makes you smile. Maybe take a walk, take a sip of water.
Dance. I do that embarrassingly sometimes. It's supposed to help. I saw somewhere that if you jump around, it helps. So it is kind of fun.
We love each of you guys. And if you ever want to talk about, you know, sort of where you are mental health wise, like please feel free to DM us on Instagram. We'd love to, you know, just talk and listen and hear where you're at and what your experience has been with mental health in the church. We'd love to be able to support you in any way that we possibly can. So please, just know if you don't have a space where you feel like you can talk about this stuff, this can be your space. We'd love it to be your space. If you like what you hear, go ahead and subscribe. Hit that little button.
Follow us on Instagram.
At Oh God Pod.
Like, review, all of the things. Send it to a friend.
Oh, yeah. Send it to a friend. Maybe find a friend who needs to listen to some mental health stuff. We love you guys and have a good week.
Bye. Maddie and Reeves are both faith leaders, and the following conversation reflects their standings and beliefs, not those of their place of employment.